Fogarty.
Hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. Top of the show.
Battery check.
Batteries are fresh.
Hooray.
Yeah, we did it
We
again.
did it, Internet.
Yep. A lot maybe has happened since we last talked. I want to kind of run things down. This is the Have We Talked About This Yet?
All right. Brand new
Segment.
segment.
Had I gotten the keyboard the last time we talked?
No, the last time we spoke, you were considering getting one. When
Aha, yes,
I
I have
was giving
gotten the
you
keyboard.
practical advice on it.
Yes. I ended up getting one for about $40. 300 voices, 300 rhythms. Full, not full size keyboard, but full size keys.
So
Not
it's
pressure
yeah,
sensitive.
it's unusual to
What's
get
that?
a full 88 key keyboard. Those are you're not going to find those for $40.
That's right. But yeah, it's so far pretty great. I bought a stand for it, and I just bought a seat for it because I've been using my exercise ball to sit at it,
Yeah.
and the exercise ball not exactly high enough,
Well,
so it's a
it all
little
depends on
silly.
how high your stand is. Is it one of those scissor stands?
It is, and I've got it at its lowest setting right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Also, I believe the last time we talked, I was talking about editing, but hadn't actually finished editing Undercover Hospital. That is now done.
Oh, is it? Is it going to be posted online
Yes.
anytime soon?
It is posted online even right
Oh,
now.
is it?
Yes, if you go to maladaptive.podbean.com, it is called Ismodito colon Undercover Hospital. And yeah,
So
I like.
how long do you think it took you to edit the entire thing?
Well, I was doing it off and on. I
Yeah.
mean,
Like if you had to take a
you know,
guess.
if we're doing it like sort of straight editing time, probably, you know,
Okay.
about. I'm thinking 20 hours maybe. But that's over the course of months.
Right.
Because like I wrote Mara and the Magicians in between that time. Or finished writing. I mean Mara and the
Finished writing.
Magicians, I've been working on it for a while. Yeah,
Right.
exactly. But yeah. So and that was the thing. I finished Undercover Hospital. And then I logged back into Twitter. I read through about, I don't know, 10 posts. And I was like, I can't take it. I don't know how you can do it, Ben. I know how Jennifer can do it. My wife, Jennifer Fact Checker, who is now back from vacation, but is still sort of on vacation. She hasn't done anything for this week's episode, because she just got back.
Like to fresh
But
today.
sh yeah. Like, about 3 hours ago.
Right.
But she can handle Twitter easily enough because she reads something. She's like, well, that's dumb. And then she moves on.
Right.
Whereas I'm like, I just sit with how dumb it is and, you know, all that. And like, I get mad about it being dumb
You
and.
feel the urge to try to correct the person on the internet?
Well, not necessarily try to correct the person on the internet, but just, you know, get a handle on why this person thinks this, you know, try to figure them
Yeah.
out and all that kind of stuff.
I have a, and I've spoken about this really conservative friend that I have on Facebook who posts all these terrible right-wing conservative memes, and I realize that I can tolerate it a lot more if I just ignore it. Because every time he posts something, I just want to go, well, that's easily debunkable. But then I've fallen into the trap and I'm arguing with someone on the internet about stupid stuff. And so I'll leave that mantle up for somebody else.
And that's the big thing is that these arguments, again, I'm point to it again. This is why the new communist millennial kids are the best at arguing this stuff, because they have a sort of weird kind of soft form martial arts thing that I don't have, where someone's like, well, you know, your opinions are wrong to them, and then they write back, but they're actually right. And that's all they say. They just do. Violence never solves anything. Actually, violence is pretty cool if you think about it. Like, they're not arguing in good faith at all. They're just being, you know, they're countering. Because this is the problem where, like, folks like you and me run into problems, is that we argue in good faith. We're like, well, you know, if you think about it logically and you do this or you do that, and people don't listen, you know, you take this time and you build up something. Whereas the kids these days, they're just like, you know, they'll make fun of your hat.
Yeah, it's kids these days. I think what I understand from what you're saying is, you're right. You and I will try to come to an agreement. We don't want to argue for the sake of arguing. We want to come to some sort of understanding. We want to
come to an accord.
We want to experience some sort of common truth, and not just name calling and making fun and dismissing.
And I'm not saying that Jennifer is a millennial, but she comes from the same sort of school that if you aren't worth her time, she's not going to spend any time on you. That kind of thing.
Which is why when I look at Twitter, I only mostly follow like friends who think the same way and sports teams.
And who?
Sports figures? Sports teams.
See, now here's the thing. Maybe you don't run into this as much, but the thing that kills me is if anyone I follow, right? And I follow people from a whole bunch of different spectrums. If anyone I follow likes something and that thing is a popular thing, it'll show up in my timeline.
Yeah.
So, like, even if I have everybody's retweets cut off, I will still see that one stupid post that everybody's talking about or whatever. Which is why, after I posted an Undercover Hospital, I stopped going on Twitter again, and I said that I would stop doing it until I could play a song with both hands on piano. Which is giving me, which is giving me a really long time, I think.
Unless you find out that you're really good at it.
At least 6 weeks. Oh, I want to be really good at it. We'll see. It's fun so far. I mean, here's the thing. I can do a thing where I play a bass note with the left hand and a chord with the right hand. Not super fast or anything, but I could, you know, like if you and I were going to do a song at Spin the Bottle or whatever, I think I would be able to muddle through it.
What is Spin the Bottle good for if not muddling through a song?
Exactly. What am I known for if not muddling through a song? However, and all of this to say, we talk about what did I get through osmosis, this week, and what I got, this is from, listening to Comedy Bang Bang, the popular comedy podcast that I enjoy listening to sometimes. And I don't remember her name, but they mentioned that there is a woman connected with the NRA who was a Russian spy?
Yeah.
Like, okay, so I figure that everybody else would already be all over this, but I heard about it just like in passing. They made a reference to this thing. So that's kind of crazy. sort of.
Yeah. Maria Butina or something like that. I was listening to Fresh Air on Thursday because it was on the radio before I went in to record the Perfect Bound podcast at Comics Dungeon. And they were talking about this. I had just absorbed some of this news from Osmosis, not really seeking it out, but like, hey, CNN's on a TV and I'm walking past it. No, there's this there's this Russian operative. But she is a non-registered Russian operative, which I think means that she was operating without the understanding of the Kremlin knowing, doing this on her own, but still for the benefit of Russia. And she was a graduate student here in the U.S. and was working to what they would say is foments hatred, not hatred, but like really promote gun rights, because she had a organization in Russia that was similar to the NRA.
Okay.
Which is nothing.
So she is from Russia.
Yes.
Now, see, so this is one thing, and I don't know if this is true. Maybe if someone fact checks this, we will know for sure. I thought that maybe this is from watching television, the Americans, right? There are people who come over from Russia, right?
Yeah.
Who are tied to the Russian consulate. And, like, you know, their names are on record and the United States knows that they're here and that they're working for...
Registered Russian operatives.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if that's what they mean, that she didn't declare that she was working for them.
Yeah. Something like that.
In that way.
The terrible news just comes so quick and dirty these days that it's really hard to keep up with all of it. And so when you hear about, this Russian operative who used sex to get her way, it's not, and to help the Republicans and Trump specifically, doesn't really register anymore because there are so many other terrible things going on.
Speaking of not registering, gun control. I'm kidding. But also, Ben, who among us hasn't used sex to get our way? At least sometimes.
That reminds me of a line from the TV show Frasier where some person accuses Frasier of using sex to get what he wants. And he goes, or just accuses men of using sex to get what they want. Frasier says, how can men use sex to get what they want? Sex is what they want.
That's funny.
Speaking of sex, I'm joking.
I'll tell you something. There's this weird kind of ironic love of Frasier that's come back around. But I don't know if it's ironic or not. There are so many layers of irony these days that I can't keep track anymore.
Does irony fold back on itself to where it's actually legit? Not legit, but so. Sincere?
Speaking of irony folding back on itself, or just anything folding back on itself until it becomes sincere, I was thinking about this. Tom Waits, right?
What's he building in there?
Did you and I go to see the concert together, or was it just me who went
to see it? That was not me. I have not seen Tom Waits live in concert.
Because you are, in fact, my concert buddy, right?
We've seen a couple.
It means that I went by myself. Yeah, I hardly ever go to concerts myself. By myself.
When was it? I mean, obviously this was when you were in Seattle, but when about?
He was at the Fifth Avenue Theater. This would have been in like 1999, 2000.
Ah.
Something like that. It was pretty good, but here's the thing about it, right?
Yeah.
Tom Waits, like, early in his career was doing an act. You know, this guy that he was on stage was probably a heightened version of who he actually was as a person. That kind of thing.
Right.
But eventually, after he was doing it, he was Tom Waits, quote unquote, for longer than he had been whoever he was before.
Right.
Right? So that, I don't know. It's just a weird kind of...
The character Tom Waits was playing was like that clip that made the rounds after Heath Ledger's Joker came out where Tom Waits sounds like Heath Ledger's Joker.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Or Heath Ledger's Joker sounds like Tom Waits from this British television show Interview.
Right, either British or Australian, I can't remember which.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. I haven't seen it in a while.
But the thing is, I just recently, like within the past couple of days, saw a clip of him from the TV show Fernwood Tonight.
Fernwood Tonight!
Have you ever... Okay, so you know about it.
Martin Mull and Fred...
Fred Willard,
Fred
right?
Willard, yes, thank you.
Yeah. So, I was impressed, you know, so he does the song. Now, one of the things is that Tom Waits is singing, and they're cutting back to Martin Mull, who's making faces, which is, you know, kind of weird. But Tom Waits is, you know, Tom Waits.
Yeah.
But he's early Tom Waits, so he's very over the top, but it's also... you know, a little trying too hard, perhaps.
Now, I'm unfamiliar with the Tom Waits timeline. Now, the album I'm probably most familiar with is Rain Dogs. Is that early Tom Waits?
No, that's more like mid Tom Waits. Okay. I think, in my opinion, this would have been the song is The Piano Has Been Drinking.
The piano.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm just going to sing everything you mentioned.
Which is earlier Tom Waits, right?
Yeah.
Than Rain Dogs. In my opinion, I'm pretty sure, and I say in my opinion, to my recollection, I should say, because it's not my opinion of when it came out. It came out when it came out. I think that's when it came out. Here's the thing that's great about it. He finishes his song, he comes over, and Martin Mull says to him, "Why don't you take a load off your act?" Which I believe is one of the more brilliant lines that I've heard in relation to early Tom Waits stuff.
I guarantee all of that was scripted.
Yeah.
But it's still a great line.
He definitely did his "I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy" line.
Yeah.
And Martin Mull definitely set that up. all of the stuff that they did, or they're like doing sort of vaudeville jokes back and forth and stuff like that, for sure.
Yeah.
And I am. But yes,
I just realized that I misspoke. It's not Rain Dogs I'm most familiar with. It's Frank's Wild Years.
Frank's Wild Years.
I just remember that's the album that we used most often in our ATF rehearsals.
Oh yeah,
and that's
right.
That's how I became acquainted with
Tom Wisely, director.
Yeah,
was a big Tom Waits fan. I was already a big Tom Waits fan at that time
because they share
having
a first
been
name.
What's that?
Because they share a first name. That's why Tom Wisely liked Tom Waits so much.
I remember Tom Wisely telling me a story about how he actually contacted Tom Waits, asking if he could do The Black Rider, which is a musical that Tom Waits and Kathleen Brennan and a couple other people worked on.
Did he did Wisely receive a response from Waits?
He did. Tom Waits said that it was too bad he was busy and wouldn't have time to come out.
Just
which
assuming
means one of two.
Yeah, go on.
Either Tom Wisely was asked. He thought Tom Wisely was asking him to do it.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Or Tom Wisely he wanted to be involved in the production so that he could sanction it or whatever.
That would have been great.
It would have been great. You know, and also, if you remember, when I talked to the Polish film director, Lech Majewski, he talked about how he actually did produce or direct a stage production of The Black Rider.
Yeah.
And I asked him if Tom Waits came out, and apparently he did.
Neat. Well, I understand that. I mean, I'm no Tom Waits, but if somebody wanted to produce, say, Naked Ladies, I'd want to go out and see it. I don't know if I'd want to be involved, but I'd definitely want to go see it.
I would like to see it, too, of course. Yeah. But So the cool thing about all that is that I was in Midsummer Night's Dream, and they played two songs from Tom Waits on it, Underground and Innocent When You Dream, and both of those really stuck with me. And so he became one of my more famous, I had a lot of people that I liked at that time,
yeah.
A lot of bands and stuff. He was one of the more famous bands that I liked. And even for that, he wasn't, like, super famous at the time.
Yeah. Never really achieved the sort of mainstream success I'm sure he didn't want.
Yeah, that's true. I Don't Want to Grow Up was a famous one. Also, Downtown Train probably is one of his most known songs because Rod Stewart did it.
Ah. Yeah, Tom Waits.
And it's great, too.
He's got a lot of great songs that other people have covered. I was at an Annex retreat, and somebody was, or the radio was playing, and there was a really great song playing. So I pulled out my Shazam app and Shazammed it. I don't know if we use Shazam as a verb these days, but it was Get Behind the Mule by an artist who's John Hammond, I think is his name. And I looked it up, and I discovered that it's actually a Tom Waits song. And so, So I bought the album Mule Variations.
Yeah, Mule Variations is great.
Yeah,
it's one of my all of his I love all of his albums. They're all good, as far as I'm concerned. Also, The Wire.
Oh yeah,
theme song for The Wire.
Yeah, I don't know if season 2 of The Wire is my favorite because I just liked the storyline best, or if they used the original Tom Waits version of the intro theme for the intro theme, and it wasn't a cover.
Here's the thing: spoilers for The Wire. Anybody who hasn't seen it, one of my favorite things about season 2 is that they totally went there. You know what I mean? Like they actually went to the docks and they did all that kind of I couldn't imagine that it was sort of a genre break or that kind of thing.
I think what makes it stand out is that for a police procedural, which is what season one set up, it really broke out of that. And continued on with that. But season two was the season where everybody's like, oh, this show is different because we're not just paying attention to the main cops that we got to know. We're paying attention to this doc guy, this sort of anti-hero who's all the wrong, all the bad things for all the right reasons.
That show is kind of, it shares DNA with Homicide: Life on the Street.
Right, which I've never seen.
Which I talk about a lot. It's like one of my favorite dramas on TV.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, Homicide: Life on the Street, to me anyway, was like Law and Order, but for like cooler kids.
Yeah. And when you say it shares DNA, it takes place in Baltimore, right? Homicide?
It does take place in Baltimore. And also, some of the people that worked on it worked, like Eric Overmyer and...
Yeah,
what's his head?
The creator of The Wire, who's...
Yeah. I can't think of his name.
Because we're recording, and obviously this is when we become the most dumb, because we can't look stuff up.
Did you know that was a feature of this podcast, dear listener? We can't look stuff up.
David somebody, I think.
David,
I want to say David Price. This is just an hour of us going, oh man, no. anyway,
okay, so but anyway, yeah, and Andre Brower,
yeah, he's great
as Detective Pemberton. Was so awesome. And now I'm watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm almost done with everything on it. And it's really, really good.
Did I hear correctly that... so I know that Brooklyn Nine-Nine was canceled by whatever network it was on, but then it got... There was like a big fan outcry.
Canceled by Fox.
But then it got picked up again by somebody else.
NBC.
NBC, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering...
Terry Crews is in that, too, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, Terry Crews is great in it.
Yeah.
So, the thing that I'm wondering about is this, right?
Yeah.
You got Andre Brower, who was in Homicide: Life on the Street, NBC show.
Yeah.
Andy Samberg, who was on Saturday Night Live, NBC. Obviously, you know, it was doing well, I thought, that show. So the move might not be such a bad thing. The weird thing is both NBC and Fox are owners of Hulu, which is where I watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly how it works. I don't know the math behind it the deals.
You know, I don't know all the parent companies of all the media organizations, but it wouldn't surprise me if NBC and Fox were owned by the same company.
It's possible, like, but I don't think so.
I think
NBC is Universal.
NBC, like, it's either like Comcast or GE or something. And
Comcast, okay, so GE used to own NBC, and then Comcast did. Okay. And I don't know. I guess they still do.
Yeah. And Fox is owned by Time Warner?
I know there was going to be a Fox Time Warner merger. I don't know if it happened or not.
Well, maybe Fox is just Fox, because I know that, that's why, because Time Warner is trying to buy Fox.
Ah, okay.
That's why, because we're kind of excited, but we're a bit iffy about that, because then you'll have the DC comic book characters finally being owned by the same company that owns it's Disney. Forgive me. It's Disney.
Well, no, but you're right. You're right, because Fox owns Spider-Man and the X-Men, I believe.
Well, it's Fox and Sony own Spider-Man, but Fox does...
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, right. Spider-Man is Sony. Fox is...
the Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four and I believe, the X-Men.
Yeah, and so when Disney... I think Fox... I just read this thing recently where Fox accepted Disney's, like, $70 billion bid to buy them. And so now we'll probably finally see a good Fantastic Four movie, because it won't be under the purview of Fox.
And we may have talked about this before, but I mean, the Fantastic Four has the potential, because of the relationships between the characters, in the hands of the right writer, it could be really good.
Yeah, and I think where they've gone wrong with all these different Fantastic Four movies is they keep trying to tell the origin story over and over. Just get to Sue and Reed fighting Dr. Doom, and you're golden.
Yeah. Well, just have them. We already know who they are, and if we don't, that's fine. I mean, look at the Incredibles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they kind
basically the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, exactly. And, man.
What you need to do is don't start off, if the Fantastic Four finally find their way into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, don't start them off with their own movie. Pull a Spider-Man on them. Put them as a featured supporting character in an otherwise established franchise.
And just have them come in, clean house. And then here's the hard part, of course, is that in the original Marvel Universe, Fantastic Four, everybody knows who they are. They live in,
first family of superheroes.
Building with a big four on it.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
Which kind of looks like A, which kind of looks like the Avengers. Anyway.
You know what I would do?
What would you do?
Honestly, if I were going to do it, I would have them be from an alternate universe where they're the most famous superheroes.
Oh yeah.
And now they're stuck here.
Well, then that's
they established
That's totally changing continuity or canon.
Well, yeah, I mean that's the idea is that the merger becomes represented in the property itself. They just show up.
Yeah.
They were in another place and now they're finally here. And they rightfully should be with the big boys, but they aren't. That kind of thing.
Right, right.
Ooh. Man, there's another thing. Oh, I don't even know if I want to say it because this also was from Comedy Bang Bang.
Is that where you get all of your material?
Yeah, exactly. That's where I get all my news from. It's pretty bad, but James Gunn.
Oh yeah,
Guardians of the Galaxy. Something happened. People dug up his old tweets.
Oh yeah. So James Gunn was fired from Guardians Volume 3 because of some. And I'll say they were some tweets in bad taste, and really offensive.
Yeah.
And I mean, this isn't excusing it. They were from like 10 years ago, or maybe even longer before he got famous, I guess. I don't know. Maybe he was just a dumb kid. A baseball player came under this sort of same scrutiny too. Josh Hader, the Milwaukee Brewers, some early tweets of his when he was 17 talking about white power were unearthed. And he had to issue a big apology. And, you know, his teammates came out in favor for him. You know, and I'll say people do grow. They mature. I'm totally glad that Twitter didn't exist when I was a teenager. Not that I would say anything like that, but you know, kids will say dumb things. But the thing is, somebody posted on Reddit today that Disney fires James Gunn for offensive tweets from 10 years ago. Also Disney. And then they posted this clip of a cartoon of Mickey Mouse putting on this sort of like this like slave dress, putting on dreads, and then putting a firecracker in his mouth until it blew up and it gave him blackface.
Oh yeah.
So Mickey Disney from the 30s was really racially offensive. But yeah, Disney has grown. Disney has changed. I'm not excusing what James Gunn has said, there's a little bit of hypocrisy here.
The thing that I would say about all of this is that it's the same thing as always. Well, when it's my guy, it's fine.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. It's just a joke. Hey, what's the problem? People say.
It's of the time.
Until it's their guy.
Yeah.
Who's making the call. And then they're like, yes, it is offensive.
So
it's like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that a number of Guardians actors have come out in favor of James Gunn, most notably Dave Bautista, who...
Oh, yeah, I like Dave Bautista's
my favorite part
work.
Of the Guardian franchise.
Yeah, and he was great. We talked about this before. He was great in the Blade Runner 2049, too. Yeah, yeah. Actually good at acting, that guy is.
Just the gleeful enthusiasm with which he can portray it just makes the film so much better. Like watching somebody get smashed over the head with a spaceship and he just busts out laughing. I really enjoy that.
So the main thing, I guess, with all this is that we are at a point when the things we care about. I'm not crying, Ben. Sorry, I just had a weird. The things we care about.
Just had a weird emotional moment.
Are used against us. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, if you believe in, and I'm just using this as an example, but someone says that, you know, transgendered students should be able to use whichever bathroom they want.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so then a guy will, will on purpose do something like a stunt or whatever, even though he's not actually transgendered, to say, well, why are you offended by this? I'm just doing what you said, you know, taking it in bad faith, basically.
Yeah.
People take things in bad faith and then they move forward with it. And it's not, this is the thing is, and this is what I keep getting impressed upon me. It's not necessarily new. You know, rigged elections aren't new. You know, none of this stuff is new. It's just everything's faster now.
Everything's faster, and everybody knows everything. I paused there because that sounds like a weird statement, but you're aware of more terrible things happening in the world these days than you were back, pre-internet.
I know I've brought this up before, and at some point in time, someone is going to have an audio web crawler that's going to go through our entire things and pick out how many times I've said this before.
Well, I hope their voice recognition software is better than what I have now, because trying to lip sync all this stuff is really hard.
there was a woman on the bus.
Goes around. And
there was
around.
A guy who was talking about something that, this is in Seattle. The guy was talking about something that had happened in Michigan, some kind of law or some kind of thing.
Yeah.
And how bad it was. And she turned to him and she said to him, "Do you know what happened on Fifth Avenue today?" And the guy was like, "Well, no, I don't, you know." And something had happened at Fifth Avenue. I forget what it was.
Some sort of terrible thing that he should have known about, other than what was happening in Michigan.
Right, and it was something to do with like school students and something like some school students got something stolen from them or whatever. Okay.
Some sort of terrible atrocity.
But her point is that we focus on things that we can't affect, usually.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's another thing that Jennifer brought up before, which is that the real sensational stuff that people hear about, and that like places like the Daily Mail run through, or you know, things like that, is stuff that you can't really fact check yourself. You know, it's news that you're getting.
Right.
That's, you know, and it's like some paper in Illinois reporting on something that happened in California or whatever, where there's a large enough remove where the nuance is sort of gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to get on the record saying this now, before anything, if anything ever happens to me, but there was a thing like 5 years ago where people were like, oh, the internet outrage mob can get you, and then all of a sudden you're a bad person. And at the time that it was happening, I was like, well, yeah, but these are bad people.
so the system is working.
And now I'm getting to the point where I'm like, okay, I honestly do get it, right? Imagine if you're at a, like, when you're at a comedy show, especially, like, improv or whatever, and you're just there for that night, and you're performing for the people in the room, and you're saying things that maybe or maybe you don't believe, but it's for the people there.
And it fits in the scene, blah, blah, blah.
Everybody's kind of on board, right?
Yeah.
As soon as a cell phone recording of that leaves the context of the show, it becomes a different thing. You've changed the parameters.
And that's how Michael Richards lost his career.
Well, yeah, that's... I'm not really...
Are you defending his racist outrage, sir?
No, of course not. I am not. This is the question, I guess. Especially at now, from 2018 and all that, he was perhaps rightfully upset at someone. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what the thing is.
I actually haven't seen that clip. I don't really want to watch it.
Me neither. That's the thing. Is that from what I understand, he was mad at somebody in the club, right?
Like a heckler or
but
something.
But again, no matter how mad you are,
right,
you can choose how you express yourself.
Right.
Or you should be able to choose. And he chose poorly. Very, very poorly. I'm not using that as an example of, because the people that were in there were not down for it, right?
Yeah.
But I will give you this example. So a politician, right? It talks to a boardroom full of investors coldly about how, you know, keeping sick people on healthcare is bad for business, let's say. They were saying that to a specific group of people for a specific reason, right?
Right.
And we don't know if they were going to, you know, the whole politicians, you know, making promises and stuff. Were they going to stand? Were they going to, you know, keep doing that? Were they going to vote for that person or in that way or whatever? We don't know necessarily.
No.
That's the big thing, is that people back before everyone was recorded were a lot more fluid.
Right. And you'll find that it is the older generation of politicians that still don't realize that anything and everything they say, whether behind closed doors or not, will probably get out.
Yeah, and the hard part for them, or the hard part for us, I guess, the regular public, is that it's starting to look like it doesn't matter.
Anymore. No, you're totally right.
Like they could say anything, and that's one of the going back to The Wire again. One of the greatest things, was that that politician who was corrupt. And they determined that he was corrupt, and they proved that he was corrupt and all that. And everything was still fine for him.
Yeah. Because he got out of it. Yeah, because of, like, if I remember correctly, because of a technicality or something.
And he stayed, you know, in charge, and people still liked him and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of depressing. But
it's also the my guy, the me versus them mindset, right?
Yeah.
You can tolerate whatever corruption or whatever terribleness your guy will or gal will say or do or has proven to have been doing because he's your guy. But as soon as the other guy does that, watch out, I'm mad.
Well, and even more so these days, I don't mind what you do as long as the people that I don't like are mad about it. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But true.
Yeah.
So let's see.
I had an experience lately where, you know, I lead a pretty sheltered, but protected life. I don't do very dangerous things on a regular basis. I don't work in construction. I wait for the light to change before I cross in front of traffic and all that. But I had experience recently where I seriously thought I was going to get very, very injured. And
No, what happened?
I'll tell you the story. But in PSO all this, everybody's fine.
Okay.
Nobody got hurt. So my theater company... And if you listen to the podcast, you'll know which theater that is. But I'm not going to say the name today because I know that the guy responsible for this is listening and he's probably going to hate it that I'm telling this story. So, Steven, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
But we recently you know how that building gets super hot in the summertime. And it's hard to get audiences to come out to shows because they don't want to sit in a 95-degree pizza oven to watch a 2.5-hour play. So we had a fundraiser to raise money to buy an air conditioning unit. And through a series of unfortunate events, the unit that we bought was delayed by a month, but we had a show opening last weekend, so we needed to get something in. So we rented a similar unit, which was a 500-pound, like 3 foot long by 2 foot wide by 5 foot tall air conditioning unit.
Wow.
The important part of this is that it's 500. It's probably like 550. Who knows at a certain point?
Okay, so not a window unit by any stretch of the imagination.
No, not a window. It's a portable unit. So it's on casters, and it's meant to be rolled in and out of rooms. But if you might remember, the aforementioned theater company is on the second floor. It's a second floor
of a place that does not have an elevator.
Correct.
Yes.
So it gets delivered.
Oh boy.
It gets delivered Tuesday morning. Sits on the sidewalk until 5 o'clock when a couple of other company members arrive to help hump it up the stairs. We get a stroke of genius from Steven, a motorized chairlift, which is basically a hand truck with like tracks on the back, so you can it'll actually run itself up the stairs. So Alex and Ian and I get Steven goes to park the truck because he rented a truck to deliver this thing. Alex and Ian and I start to just take it up the first five steps. There's five steps until you get to a landing, and then you turn a corner and you have to go up another 10 steps where you or like 12 steps, and then you turn a similar corner and you go up the final like 12 steps, and then you get to the top of the stairs. So we put it on this hand truck, and Alex and Ian are at the top, so they're pulling, and I'm on the bottom. And I'm wearing shoes that basically have no traction. Because I walk everywhere. I walk about 2 miles a day. And so the traction on my shoes is basically they're slick. So, and this is an air conditioning unit. So they tilt it back, and it's 3 feet long, so I'm already extended at the maximum while it's tilted back on ground level. And we start moving it up the steps. And it's not that big of a deal right now. But then when we get like three steps up, I notice that it's leaking water. And it's making the tile floor wet.
Oh, no.
And flat shoes on a tile floor does not make for good traction. And so at one point, I think when we get it like it's on the third step, I am fully extended. I have 500 pounds of air conditioning unit directly above my head. If Alex and Ian let go of this thing, I'm not going to be able to hold it, and it's going to crush me.
Yeah.
So just...
And are you pushing... So this thing is motorized.
The thing is motorized, but I'm still pushing it because it's a hand truck. So the part that the thing is resting on is only like 12 inches deep. So I'm pushing it. I'm pushing it up, and I'm slipping, but I'm still trying to hang on. And it's and through just a sheer force of will, we get this thing up on the first landing. We almost crush Ian because he's a bigger fella, and he's like in the corner. And this thing, when it's pointed towards the door, takes up basically the entire landing.
Yeah.
We get it to the top, and nobody gets hurt. But I'm at one point, I'm like, guys, I'm at the end. I'm at the end of my rope. I can't. I'm losing it. And we get it to the top of the landing, and we try to turn it, but we can't turn it enough to go up the next set of steps. And thank God, because I would not have wanted to help haul this thing up another 10, 12 steps, because if it fell, it could have killed somebody.
Yeah.
So, I was literally shaking after we had got this thing on the final landing. And I'm looking at my arm now. I have three bruises. I've got cuts and scrapes. It was a hell of an ordeal. So
now, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Steven, was he there during that time, or
he showed up? He showed up, so he had to go park the truck. He rented like a zip truck.
Yeah, I heard about that part. Yeah,
he had to go park it, and he showed up like 30 seconds after we finally got it to the first landing.
Okay,
so he just missed all the fun.
Okay,
and
because that was my thought was that if I know Steven, he probably had a plan, kind of.
I think the plan was, what Alex and Ian had decided was just to just get this thing up into the space. But anyway, after we had it on the first landing, we decided to not try to take it up to the other two flights of steps to Annex and just to send, or sorry, to our theater company, and to just send it back and get a smaller unit. So that meant on Wednesday, we had to take it down five steps. And that was also really, really hard because Steven and Ian were at the bottom and Alex and I were on the top. And I'm like, you know, I'm 5'10", 150.
Wait a second. Who's Alex?
Alex King. You know Alex King. He's the TD. He, if you saw him, you'd recognize him. He's the associate TD of our theater.
Okay. Yeah.
Smart dude, really, really good problem solver. So, it took us, it took us like 20 minutes and all of our energy, all of it, to get this thing back down five steps without hurting anybody.
Wow. And
we accomplished what Steven said later on was a heroic feat. And,
That sounds,
and we got a smaller unit and it's working. You know, I've been at the space when the air conditioner's on, and it's keeping the space not cool, but not 95 degrees. It's about 80 in there. So if anybody wants to go see a show at that theater company, I've already mentioned the name of it, whatever. Go see it because it's not going to be terribly dangerous.
Wait, so this smaller unit, was it the smaller unit that you rented, or is this the smaller unit that's going to be there forever now?
The smaller unit that we rented, the unit that's going to be there forever. So here's a PS of this story. The unit that we bought is about the same size and weight as the one we couldn't get up the stairs.
Exactly. That's what I was concerned about.
So the PS of that story is Catherine, the artistic director, found a company that is willing to move it up the stairs for us. It's actually a company consisting of firefighters who move things in their spare time.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be great.
And they have a hydraulic jack. So, you know, Catherine sent them the dimensions, the weight, the, you know, what the stairs look like, and they're like, "Oh yeah, that's no problem. We do that all the time." So, we're not going to have volunteers hump this thing up three flights of stairs. We're going to have firefighters do it.
I'm happy that these guys do this, and thank goodness.
I know. I'm happy. I'm so happy that they existed and that they exist and that we found them.
I mean, they are saving lives in their spare time as well.
I know, right? Like. Oh my God! Oh. The Tuesday and Wednesday were some of the most emotionally and physically taxing that I have gone through in a long time.
Ben, this makes me happy, and I know that we don't normally do this, but I would love for you to let people know who these guys are. So if anyone listening
firefighters?
Yeah,
Know, I don't know what they're called. I don't know what the name of them, but I'll figure that out. That'll be my homework. I'll have Catherine tell me what the name is, and then I'll mention it next week.
Because we have some listeners who are in big cities, a big city known as Seattle. And, you know, it's good to have this resource, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can think of several times where, it's like if this thing gets away from us, that's it. There's nothing
you can do.
Could hurt a person, could dent a wall, you know, whatever.
When I was underneath the unit and unsure of whether or not I was going to make it out, I never really thought my life was in danger. I knew that I could get seriously injured if something terrible happened. But like my plan was just to get out of the way as quickly as possible. Not care about like, oh, we're going to lose our deposit on the rental. You know, just.
Yeah.
Get out of the way and let it crash and break as long as I wasn't underneath it.
A good enough time to bring up John McKenna, who played the devil in our
Ava Adore
music video. Yeah, he got hit by a building once.
He did get hit by a building.
The facade of a building.
Yeah, of the Icon Grill. The brick facade just decided to fall off right when he was walking underneath it on his way to work one morning.
And I gotta say, of course, the Icon Grill, best bathroom in Seattle during the 90s or late 90s, early 2000s.
I never been in there, so I don't know what the bathroom's like.
Oh my gosh. Okay, the men's bathroom, Ben. Ride of the Valkyries is playing, and there are videos of geysers going off and firemen putting out fires with hoses, and it's just amazing. You get in there and you want to pee, and you are peeing. You feel mighty about peeing,
and you don't want to leave because it was such a great experience.
Well, it really. I mean, anytime I went to the Icon Grill, I was like, I can't wait to use the bathroom.
And you used to live right around the corner, so, and in this apartment where your toilet was broken, so you probably just walked over to the Icon Grill just because you could.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. Ben, I will swear to you, I hadn't thought of it. I should have done it. And speaking of, I should have done it. Hey, Betty!
It's the first shouting for Betty we've had in a couple weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to be fun. Because... Hey, Betty. So...
It's your boy.
Betty has, just to paint a picture... Betty has a whole bunch of fake tattoos all over her.
Cool.
She's wearing a shirt that says Sunday Fun Day with a picture of Ice Cream Sundae on it. And she's eating kettle cooked potato chips.
I like those kettle cooked
potato chips. Now you know.
The rest of the story. I like those kettle cooked potato chips. My favorite are the salt and cracked pepper flavor.
I like the salt and cracked pepper too, but Betty is eating baked Lay's and she's eating it directly into the microphone. Probably on purpose.
Well, I can't hear it from my end, but I'm sure when I get your file later on,
it's ASMR for the people who. Okay, she is now leaving. Betty, what's happening? Okay, she's now shutting the door. Okay, I guess yelling for Betty is over.
Is she done with us? Have we outstayed our welcome?
Maybe so. We'll see. Again,
I knew this would happen. I thought it might happen when she turned maybe like 15 or 16, but I knew that she would come to not be as enthusiastic about being on the podcast as she has been.
Yeah, I know. It's there's going to be a supercut eventually, I think, of every single episode of her, and you're going to get to hear her grow up.
Yeah.
In voice, and then these parts are,
And who's going to do that supercut? Why, you, Paul Goody, the richest man in the cemetery.
Did you just say the richest man in the cemetery?
I went to an Ebenezer Scrooge. I don't know why. It's yours, Ebenezer Scrooge. So the first thing that came to my mind.
That's great. I love it. yeah, probably me. But no, I mean, Ben, eventually, I'm telling you, audio web crawler.
You know, if that doesn't already exist, it's not far off.
You think of all the podcasts everywhere and, you know.
Oh, my God.
People are going to start looking for their names.
The part of me actually kind of likes that because I want to be like, oh, man, what's that one episode where they talked about that one thing, but I can't remember. Just do an audio crawler search, and I find that exact episode where they mention that one thing that I'm thinking of.
Yep. Although, you know what the problem is going to be, Ben?
What's that?
All the royalties that people are going to owe folks for... humming their songs and singing their songs.
Oh,
and
yeah. That's YouTube's content gatekeeping. I forget what it's called, but sent to a whole new level.
Oh, man. That was the one other thing I wanted to talk about, and it's good because we're kind of at the end.
We're kind of getting kind of close.
I saw a TED Talk that was all about children's YouTube.
Children YouTube?
That the stuff that kids watch on YouTube, like toy unwrapping, Kinder Surprise Egg.
Okay.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That there are literally thousands of videos that people make that fit into these parameters, and nobody knows exactly how they're being made or by whom. But there's an but basically there's an algorithm, and one of the suggestions that, that came out of this was that perhaps they're getting the name of the algorithm or the results of the algorithm first, like what the most popular titles would be for videos,
right,
and then making the videos afterwards. And it might all be money driven, or it's really kind of an interesting. It's like 15 minutes.
YouTube is becoming like the Times Square of the 1980s and 1970s. It's like it's a place you don't really want to go because it's where all it's a hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yes.
But then maybe Rudy Giuliani will take over YouTube and clean it up like he did Times Square, and it'll be a pleasant place again with a Dave and Buster's and a McDonald's and living statues. Yeah.
The one thing I know for sure is that tomorrow Betty and I are going to be going to the Fabulous Fox Theater in St. Louis to witness two YouTubers from Great Britain do a show.
Who are they?
I don't know what their show says. I don't remember their names. The name of the tour is the Interactive Introverts Tour.
All right. Well, that's your homework for next week. You got to find out or let me know. Not to find out because you'll have found out, but let me know who these YouTubers are that you go see tomorrow.
I could. Oh, wait. You know what, Ben?
No excuses, Paul.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I could call Betty back in, because she could definitely tell you. But unfortunately, it's that time.
It's that time. Well, it's been a pleasant hour of all these different topics we've been speaking of. I hope that you keep it wrong, Paul.
Yes, Ben, and I once again invite you to keep it wrong. Until next week, thank you, and have a pleasant evening.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
See ya.